everybody. Welcome to our Saturday morning podcast. My next guest is somebody I've been communicating with for a while, and I'm truly excited to talk to her because I think she's kind of the future of my business. My business is a lot of things. It's TV, it's digital, it's podcasting, it's radio. You know, it's multi-platform. I've said this before. When I started in the business, I used to get one piece of paper. Here's your AM radio ratings. Now I get 13. Facebook, Twitter, you know. I'm not on Twitch. Maybe that'll be part of it. But Erica Nardini is the CEO of Barstool Sports. Now, this is a really compelling story. So she joins them 4 years ago as the company's first CEO. Okay, it was a regional blog. It started with a talented guy. You've probably seen him, Dave Portnoy, the pizza app, the pizza stuff. Very outspoken. Now you see him all over Jim Cramer and, you know, CNBC. So it's a regional blog. It's got a dozen employees. It's now a national multimedia force, 180 employees. Valuation, somewhere between $100 million and $500 million and growing. And Erica Nardini has been called one of the most powerful women in sports by Adweek and Forbes. She also has a podcast she does every day called The Token CEO. Please listen. First of all, it's a real pleasure. I think I reached out to you a while back. It is, you are a strong woman at a company which is very tribal and can be very male and can be very, I would say, tough. Has it been, Erica, harder, easier, or about what you expected?
Hey, Con. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about this. It's great to connect. I honestly, Con, when I joined 4 years ago, almost 5 years ago at this point, I didn't know what to expect. And what Barstool was in 2016 is pretty different than what it is now in terms of just our size and our scale and how many people there are and how many things we're doing every day. So, you know, definitely there's a lot of chaos. It's a tough crew. We've got a lot of personalities. We're on a lot of different platforms, like you mentioned, but I've loved it. So, you know, there were things I felt I could expect and I certainly brought to the table from my experience. There's a ton that I've learned. We've made, a ton of mistakes. We've had a lot of wins, and it's been an awesome ride.
So it starts with Dave Portnoy, who is a very talented, he's a digital rock star. So he starts with this little thing called Barstool in Boston. It's a sheet. He works his ass off for years, got a little chip on his shoulder like all Boston guys. He's sort of the Dana White of his industry. He wants to prove everybody wrong, kind of a legendary story in my business. Bill Simmons ignored him one time. He's used that chip on his shoulder, and he's a smart guy, and he's super hyper-aggressive. And I noticed him about 4 or 5 years ago, never met him. I don't think I've even been in the same room, but I kind of noticed that he was creating this tribal following and he is a big personality. So that's what you inherit. And there's goods and there's bads to that. Chip on the shoulder is Dave has a work ethic. Dave has a drive that is very unique. But what were the issues with Dave initially? Because you had to harness some of that and manage some of that. Could you get through to him initially to say, listen, you're talented, but to take it to the next level, we got to do check, check, check.
Yeah, you know, I met Dave. So, you know, the Chernin group, so Peter Chernin, who came out of Fox, obviously, had put a investment in Barstool Sports.
Yep.
I had heard about the opportunity. I was in a different startup at the time, and I was jealous when I heard about it. I was in Boston when Dave started the paper. I was a fan of Barstool Sports. I had a ton of I love Tom Brady. I was all about Deflategate. I had a ton of the T-shirts. But I met Dave through a mutual friend unrelated to, you know, at the time they were looking for a CEO. And I met him in a coffee shop in the West Village. And to be honest with you, Colin, like, I didn't know what I was going to get. I'm like, I saw this guy run for mayor. I've read every headline about him. Like, am I walking into a meeting with a terrorist? Or I just didn't know what to expect. And to be honest with you, I loved him. He was smart and had a ton of vision. He was proud of what he built. He was very honest. Like, the thing about Dave, whether you love Dave or hate Dave, like, Dave calls it like Dave sees it, and he has a conviction to him that I think is unmatched. And that when you couple that with a good sense of marketing and an incredible consistency and the work ethic that you mentioned, it's very interesting. And what I felt, you know, really from the first time we connected was he wanted Barstool to go places that it hadn't been before. Barstool was still in New York at that point in time. It was Dave and maybe two other guys in New York City. There wasn't an office. There wasn't a P&L. They didn't have email. They didn't really talk to one another. They just vlogged every 30 minutes. Were just consistent and worked hard and had a lot of opinions. So, what I really felt like was that I could bring where I had been, which is also was in the internet. I also loved to work. I also believed in consistency. And we really connected around the merch business in particular, and then podcasting and video. And it just kind of clicked, to be honest with you. And then we just started and set about building it. And we had to learn a lot of it and go through a lot of it together. You know, I think one of the things that's hard is most founders don't want to bring in another person. Most founders and creatives are like, I got this. I got the business side of it. I got the content side of it. I got the promotion side of it. And what was really different about Dave was Dave wasn't like, I got this. Dave was like, I'm the face of it. I've gotten it this far. I have zero interest in the things you're going to do here. Or he cared. He had a vested interest, but he didn't want to. He didn't pretend that he had those things, wanted to do those things, or knew those things. And so it created almost enough room for me to set about building a business. And I've talked about this before, but, you know, I basically bubble wrapped all the personalities and went about building a business because I didn't want the business to change who they were.
Yeah.
And I saw from Yahoo and I saw from Microsoft, and I'd worked at all these big companies that when the business people start running the creative people, like, good things usually don't happen.
That's right.
So that's kind of how we set about doing it. And, you know, we've had some success with it.
Yeah, more than success. Erica Nardini, CEO of Barstool Sports, named the most controversial woman in sports by the New York Post. I don't see her that way. New York Post apparently does. But I think what I was struck with you and when I reached out to you initially, it was that you defended your personalities even through controversial times. And I work for massive corporations. And historically, they either don't support you, bail on you, or they feel marginalized and it gets very defensive. You, from the very beginning, have defended your people. And so I kind of look at Barstool as a talent-based business. Dan Katz, Big Cat, a PFT commentator, commenter. So my question, though, is this. How do you incubate talent? Like, let's talk Dan Katz. So obviously, the more powerful podcasts you have, the better the business. It drives revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Simmons can have a million podcasters, but in my opinion, we listen to about three over there. You have two or three, and now with a golf show, maybe four rock stars. How was Dan Katz found? What are you looking for as a CEO? Is balance overrated? Is it just somebody that's a little unhinged? What in your space now are you seeking as a personality?
That's a great question. So, you know, Dan Katz, I think, is one of the biggest superstars in sports right now. Like, he is an exceptional talent and personality. And we are fortunate in that we have a lot of great personalities. You mentioned, you know, PFT is an incredible personality. Riggs, Paul Bissonnette, Ryan Whitney, Alex Cooper. Like, we've got really phenomenally talented people. I would say a couple things make these people. One, and I love working with these kinds of people. Like, I think there's something so exciting and rewarding and unpredictable about great talent. And harnessing talent isn't easy. I mean, you know what it's like to work in a talent business. You are talent. Like, it's a pain in the ass, but really great things, if you stick with it and you stick with them, really great things can come of it. You know, from our vantage point, Dan came to Barstool. I think he used to call into Dave's Power Hour show. And, you know, one of the biggest differences I always saw with Dave and Simmons was that Dave wanted other big stars around him always.
Yeah,
he always had a cast of characters around him, all of whom are still here today. So when you look at, you know, he had an intern who, you know, Hank, the handsome Hank, the intern. Hank is now the producer of the single biggest sports podcast in the world. He's a phenomenal talent in his own right. He's been with Dave for 8+ years. So Dave has a very good eye for talent and was comfortable in having other egos and talent and personality around him, which I think is important. I think the second thing is right now, you know, when Barstool started, or, you know, when you started, there was so much less fragmentation. Like, you could have a story, own a story, talk about a story till the cows came home, and no one else would really infringe on that story. No one else, you just had so much more space for your own content. And that was true when Barstool started, which is Dave could find a weird story on the internet on YouTube, and he could sit on it for a month because nobody else was going to find that weird story. Now there's so much fragmentation. There's so much competition. You know, everything is in a single post or a single tweet or a single stream. Like, there's just so much content that it's, to find talent now, one, I think it's important that people are able to use their own platforms to break through, so that they, you know, they have something to say, they've got a way of getting people's attention, and they have the work ethic and drive to keep at that thing, even when they think nobody's listening. And very few of them break through, but when you see them break through, you know that that talent or that personality can be massively, massively bigger, if that makes sense. So, you know, I look for talent on TikTok. I look for talent out of Twitter. We look for talent out of, you know, Instagram. But what you're finding right now is, like, it's almost a golden age of being, of individual media companies, individual media forces, these people who can harness their voice, their iPhone, the platform that gives them space to broadcast. And if you can find people there and, you know, give them enough creative freedom, give them the right amount of resources, not too much, but the right amount of resource, and then give them the lift to build a business, like, that's, to me, what the future is going to look like.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, now the challenge, Eric Gernardini joining us, CEO of Barstool Sports, the challenge is... And oblige me for 90 seconds, I'll tell this story. When I left ESPN, I thought it had become too big, a bit of an aircraft carrier. And I went up and I met with one of the executives, John Wildhack. And as I walked into his office, I was about... it was their last pitch to keep me. And there was a picture on the wall of he and his son and his wife on a little powerboat. And as I sat down and we were talking about, you know, my future there, and it was the very end, I said, John, and I pointed up to that boat... as he was sitting in his, you know, oak, his big
panel
desk,
boardroom.
And I'm here just an employee. And I said, you see that boat? I said, you know why you have fun with that boat with your son and your wife? Because of your turning radius. You can stop on a dime. It's sporty. I said, this company's become an aircraft carrier. It takes me 6 weeks to get an answer on an email. The challenge for you now, Erica, you go from a small, nimble company. You are growing into now a massive company. Are you concerned the turning radius will be harder as the company exponentially grows?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, so it's funny. I've been in those boardrooms at ESPN, and whenever somebody from Barstool is in there, it just makes people itch. But they get like hives. I remember we had a meeting before we did Van Talk, and we had a bunch of people from ESPN into our office, and I swear to God, they thought they were going to get fired just by, like, literally being in the building. You could just sit with the discomfort was palatable. But yes, of course I worry about it. You know, we're getting to be much bigger. We have grown, you know, from a revenue base in our company of, like, let's say under $5 million to, you know, now we have a valuation of $450 million. Like, we have grown so rapidly. This has happened in the course of 4 years. Like, that managing that kind of growth is challenging. And it also presents, you know, there's kind of new problems at every stage. Like, the problems I had in 2016 were like payroll calling. Like, I was like, how am I going to make payroll? Like, how am I going to convince enough advertisers to come onto this platform and give us a chance? Or how am I going to convince Facebook to let us run on Facebook? Or, you know, the problems I had then were problems of getting access and a chance and the first, you know, just getting someone to make a small bet with us. Now the problems that I have or the challenges and the things that I think about is, you know, how do we keep the edge? How do we stay on top of everything that's new? How do we continue to find and win talent? How do we make, you know, how do we build and sustain a very big business that is sitting alongside that's something that should always be chaotic. And, you know, what the luxury that I had and the thing that I've loved about my Barstool experience is that I got to build a company in 2016 because, you know, Dave had a company, but it wasn't really a formal media company. So I got the chance to build a company with Dave the way I thought a company should look in 2016. And we don't have any legacy. There's not any hangover from television. There's no, you know, group that used to be in power that isn't in power any longer. And so we got to build something that was built for an era that's all about social and all about multiple formats of content and multiple types of personalities and multiple types of revenue models. But now I have to keep innovating on that and keep breaking it and reshaping it because we're changing a lot. The space is changing a lot. And we're becoming, you know, the turning radius, I have to keep it as sharp as it can possibly be, because that's ultimately what makes Barstool work.
You know, it is interesting to take Netflix. So Netflix is the subscription model, which, you know, I grew up as a kid. HBO was the subscription model. Yeah, that's right. Showtime. Then it's Netflix. Well, now it's, as you pointed out, it's fragmented. There's, it's Amazon Prime. I've got Paramount. Yep. I watch Yellowstone, Netflix. So markets eventually get crowded. So you guys are, you open up, you get big on the podcasting. Now I'm watching podcasting get fragmented. Mm-hmm. So I think it's actually good for the talent, because I think there's going to be a handful of talent over the next 10 years, you know, that will PFT, Commenter, Big Cat, Portnoy, I'm sure will be, you know, part of that revolution, right? Like, so mm-hmm. I should say you were part of a revolution. Then the revolution becomes mainstream. And so 10 years from now, Erica, if I mm-hmm. said to you in a paragraph, explain in 10 years from now what podcasting became, what will it be as it gets? The revolution's over. It's now a business. It's going to be a $1 billion business this year, a $5 billion business in 5 years. What's it going to look like 10 years from now?
I'll give you what my take is on it, Colin, and I could be wrong, but so we're in an era of like massive fragmentation, right? The points of access to make content have just exploded. They've opened up. When you started in your career and you grew up through the system, you had to get somebody to take a chance on you, give you a half hour, an hour, 2 hours of a very finite schedule, right? Like every time I meet with people from television media or traditional media, they think in finite linear blocks. They say, I have 24 hours to play with. I can break that into 30 seconds, 30 minute slots or 1 hour slots. Like the media world has been thought about. And then the social web, the portals and the internet came along, and then social kind of blew the lid off of everything. But when you look at it, there's 800,000 podcasts in the world right now. Like nobody's listening to 800,000 podcasts. So it's extremely long tail. What you're going to see, in my opinion, is podcasting in 10 years time and probably before that will become the single biggest source of other types of media. So movies will be born out of podcasts. Books are going, books used to be the originator for podcasts. Now books are going to come out of podcasts. Feature-length films are going to come out of podcasts. The way you thought about touring, the way everyone's thought about touring is going to not be collections necessarily of music artists, although those will always, music will always be so prominent and prevalent, but you're going to see collections of personalities. So if you look at, frankly, the way YouTube has grown and the idea of YouTube stars, the same is going to be true in podcasting. What I think is different is podcasting is far more, to your point, controlled by the talent or the creator. So a Barstool Sports or a Big Cat, let's say. And the problem for YouTube, for all the stars that grew up on YouTube, they were completely tied to monetization on YouTube and to distribution on YouTube. It was hard to get those stars to travel to other platforms or places or other forms of making money. Podcasting will be much easier to do that because it's a much freer medium and it's a medium that is not beholden to any one technology platform. You can have a podcast on Apple, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Spotify. You see, obviously, Spotify is trying to pull a lot of people to Spotify exclusively. But what you're going to see in the future for podcasting is, I think, two things. One is a lot of the biggest stars and quote unquote media in the world will come out of podcasts. Two is, I think you're going to see like a pretty massive convergence where you're going to see things like, imagine when Amazon gets NFL rights, and Amazon is going to take a live football game coupled with Dan Katz and PFT commenter from Pardon My Take and a second screen. And that can be an audio stream. It can be a chat stream. It can be a video stream. Like, all these things are going to come together into one place. And so I think the tail is going to tuck back into the head, and that's going to be how content is consumed and engaged with and monetized. Does that make sense? Are you still here, Colin?
Yeah, no, this is fascinating to me. I could sit and listen to this for hours. My producer, John Goulet, is looking at me and like, this is Colin's heaven.
Like, get her to shut
this
up.
This is my heaven. Listening to a really smart CEO. Her podcast is Token CEO. It's Erica Nardini. You know, it's interesting. So as a broadcaster to big corporations, I always saw myself strangely, perhaps, as the judge. The consumer is the jury. They'll weigh in. The topics are the defense attorney or the prosecuting attorney, and I'm the judge. I listen to all the information, and then I render a verdict. I think balance for me is important. I'm an independent voter. I'm socially liberal. I'm fiscally conservative. But I look at it and I think to myself, am I Jurassic? Am I outdated? Hannity right, Mad Al left. Do you think balance matters? Or is it really be tribal, go all in on what you care for? As a broadcaster, you know, maybe I'm old school. I look at it like I'll render a verdict on all the information, and then the jury will weigh in on if they like it or they don't like my opinion. Your take on how I see myself as a broadcaster, and I'm not offended in the least, is that outdated? Is it better to just go all right, all left, all crazy, all tribal? Your thoughts.
All right. My thoughts is that one, your opinion matters. And being for you, you would be inauthentic if you were going to go throw yourself with the right or you're going to go throw yourself with the left. Like, in your heart, you're in the middle, right? And you speak from the middle, and your opinions generally range. And I don't mean that you're middle of the road, but they come from the place that is true to how you feel, how you think, how you feel, and how you act. I think where people get in trouble is in two places, and where they start not to matter is in something related to that. So one is, my opinion is that if you purport to be something that you are not, your audience becomes the jury, and they will, what's the word when the jury convicts you? Like, the audience will not fall. The audience right now has gotten so smart where if you are inauthentic, they can see through it.
Yeah.
That's one thing. I think the second thing is, I think opinion is what's going to matter more than anything. If you look at Joe Rogan, right? Joe Rogan is poised with this move to Spotify for them to put a lot of backing around him and his opinion. And I think that's what ultimately is going to be prevalent. I think the third piece that becomes difficult for folks is when you say that you're something, but the hypocrisy. Like, I think what you're seeing right now playing out, at least on the internet, and that's mostly what I spend my time looking at, is hypocrisy is a problem. When media is exposed for hypocrisy, that's when people get really riled up. That's when you lose fan bases. That's when people turn off. And then the last thing is, like, I don't think in your opinion you are professing to be perfect. And I think, you know, I think you lose fans and you become irrelevant. I don't think you have to artificially cast to one side or the other. You know, what I like about Barstool is we've got a mix of everything. We have people who are on the right. We have people who are on the left. We have people who hate each other. We have different people who hate each other the next day. There's all sorts of fighting. There's all sorts of topics. There's all sorts of drama. it makes us like live sports because you never really know what's going to happen. And on one day you could love Kevin Clancy, who's one of our big stars, or on the next day you could agree with Dave Portnoy, and then you flip-flop.
Yeah.
But the problem right now in media, in my opinion anyways, is that traditional media wants everything nice and tidy. They've made
yes.
very big studios.
Yeah.
They've made very big spaces. It should be perfect. And nobody gives a shit about... Sorry, I don't know if I can swear on
No, you can say anything you want. No, no. I've never watched a single TV show because I like the set. I don't even remember what... Bill O'Reilly dominated for 20 years on Fox. I couldn't tell you what a set looked like. I have no idea.
Right, right. So people don't care about the trappings anymore. And the majority of institutionalized media, you know, it is about the trappings. So, you know, you asked me about the turning radius of Barstool in our ship. And, you know... Take quarantine. You know, we basically decided on a Thursday afternoon that the office was shutting. We had to send everybody home. We could no longer keep our office in New York City open because of the pandemic. Now, if we were a normal company and we ran ourselves like big institutionalized media companies, that would be a massive problem because how do you make a show when there's no producer? How do you make a show when there's no studio and no cameras and no lighting and no makeup and no scripts and all this kind of stuff? What we did is we sent everybody home with everything we gave them in the first place, a computer, a microphone, and a camera and their phone, camera/their phone. And we said, go crazy, like go cover the internet, go make content. In that time, we launched 32 new shows. Dave became, you know, arguably one of the biggest forces in finance right now. Dan Katz is the single biggest streamer on Twitch, playing an NCAA football game from 2014. So I think that, you know, if you are who you are and you use the resources in front of you and you can create intimacy with your audience and you can create a conversation with them that resonates and makes them think and that they disagree with and agree with simultaneously or alternatively, that's the conversation of it all, the progress of it all, the reality of it all, I think is what makes the time so exciting.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So you're a strong, independent, smart female CEO in a business, sports media, that has historically been a lot of dudes. Now people don't have the choice but to hear you, listen to you, and respect you. Your first year on the job, did you get more pushback than you thought? You were, obviously you've been a perfect fit there, but go back to your first year at Barstool. Do you remember it fondly?
Yes, I loved the Barstool guys at the time. I was the only woman there. They were always very good to me. And honestly, Colin, like I just don't think about my gender at work. I have the luxury of not thinking about it. It also is just, you know, I'm so comfortable with these people because we've grown this thing together. And when you have a team, you know, I grew up playing sports, like, a team is a team is a team. You're just a team. These are your teammates. But, you know, when I joined Barstool, I lost a lot of friends because I had decided to join Barstool. And I lost some stature. I was removed from two board seats that I had. The decision to come to Barstool Sports was not well met universally or kindly. That was good for me personally because I felt it made me realize that I had only one way out, which was to make this a success, and that I could not ever go back. Like I was crossing a bridge to do something, and that was it. The bridge, I would not be able to turn around off the bridge. And personally, that was good for me. I do notice it in sports media. Like, you know, we've hired a lot of women at Barstool. I, you know, Casey Smith, Liz Gonzalez, Ellie Schnitt, you know, Alex Cooper, Rhea and Fran, who are the stars of Chicks in the Office. We've brought a lot of women into our fold and given them the same opportunities any man here. But I notice it for me personally is when I go to other companies in sports, in sports betting, in media. I'm usually the only woman in the room in banking and finance. Like, I'm usually the only woman in the room.
Wow.
And that sucks. Like, that's annoying. Now, do I give a shit? I don't really care because I spend, you know, most of my time with guys anyways at this point. But there is a large lack of representation, especially at the highest levels in this industry. And, you know, there needs to be a better pipeline. There has to be better opportunity. Women need to be given a chance. You know, I remember meeting with Peter Chernin before I took the job, and he was basically like, why the fuck do you think you're qualified for this job? And I, like, pitched my heart out, Colin. Like, I pitched my heart out because all I needed was for him to give me a chance. And he didn't know if I would be successful or not. Chances are I probably wouldn't be. But he gave me the chance. And I think that's what anybody needs is a chance.
Yeah. Erica Nardini, CEO of Barstool Sports. This has just been so great for me. The, you know, it's just, it's, what's funny about our business, you know, there are certain businesses, retail's obviously had this revolution with Amazon, but there are certain businesses that just move very quickly. Tech, obviously. If you left the earth, came back 5 years, tech looks different.
Mm-hmm.
Media, similarly, I mean, it's just a different platform every week. TikTok's a prime example. I'm not on it. My daughter is. I would find it hard to monetize. Do you embrace every new platform, or do you look at some and think, you know, if you can't make money off it, what's the point? Or do you believe you have to be on the platform just to be visible on the platform, regardless of monetization?
I don't think about monetization first. We always think about brand and content first. We don't like platforms that are closed, or, you know, what I would describe as distracting, right? Like, so when you look at a lot of digital media companies, for example, you know, when Verizon launched Go90, which was like an epic failure of a video platform, you had all these companies kind of cast their lot with Go90, and they decided to make shows only for Go90. You know, Quibi comes around and everyone's like, Quibi has money. I'm going to make shows for Quibi. We don't do things like that because I think that that's distracting from your true purpose. What we do is, you know, TikTok launches. We watch it for about 15 minutes. And the great thing about Barstool is we have such a free creative space that it's not like we gave a mandate that said, go get on TikTok. We looked on TikTok and our people were already on there. And I think that's another part of what makes Barstool really different is there's not a top-down mandate on much. And we have creators and personalities and talent who themselves are interested in spending their nights and their weekends figuring out these platforms. So for me, I like that because it, you know, one of the things that was hard when I came to Barstool is, you know, I'll give you an example, and you can shut me up if I'm being too long-winded, but we were very late to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Barstool wasn't on YouTube. Like, when everybody else was on YouTube in the mid-2000s, like, Barstool wasn't there. Same with Facebook. We missed Facebook. And it's been very, once a social platform is established, it's just like describing ESPN, it's very hard to grow on that platform. When a social media platform is new, Colin, you can grow. It exponentially favors the early adopters. You can grow very, very fast. And that happened when Facebook launched. That happened when YouTube launched. That happened with Instagram. And it's now happening with TikTok, and it's happening with Twitch. So I like us being there because we will get a disproportionate advantage in how big our brand can come. We're the single biggest publisher on TikTok right now. Now, I think that's probably because everybody else is like, how the hell do you make money on this thing? And I'm like, we'll just figure it out later. But it's also because we got there early and we started focusing on it early.
Great advice. All right, Erica, you're busy. I'm not as busy. I just blab for a couple hours and go home and play tennis. No, it's this has been incredible for me. I'm very happy for your success. I think it's
thank you so much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, and I love our friendship and being in touch.
Yeah. So, congrats to Dave and Dan and PFT commenter. I called him PFT commentator, so that will probably become in itself a podcast ripping me today, and I'm here for it. I am all here for it.
Do you know that we have an impersonator of you?
Yes, I forget Joey something. Yes, he's very funny.
Yeah,
he's great.
Joey Molinaro, he's great.
Yeah, very, very funny. That's a mistake. I should have hired the guy. I would have hired him and buried him. But instead, I find it actually, my kids think it's hysterical. So I'm like,
he's quite good at it.
Oh God, he did a Nick Saban the other day that was so funny. He's just, congrats to you. Erica, great talking.
Thank you, Colin. We'll talk to you later.